The recordings have started, sir.
Thank you very much. Okay, welcome everyone to the first call of the Policy Development Process Work Team of the PPSG. There's a lot of abbreviations. I was at a meeting yesterday where someone actually did a glossary, which might actually help for this as well. So I'm going to turn it over to Gwen to do a roll call to see who's on the call, and then we'll get started.
Thank you, Jeff. On the call, we have Jeff Newman, who is the interim chair, Emily Murray, who is standing in for Brian Winterfeld from the IPC, Paul Dears, Registrar Constituency, James Bladel, Registrar Constituency, Mike Rodenbach, Business Constituency, David Maher, Registry Constituency, Wolf Ulrich Knoben, ISP, and Marilyn Cade, Individual. And for staff, we have Margie Malam, Marika Koenig, Liz Gaster, and Glenda Saint-Jury, myself. I have just seen that Christina Rosette from the IPC has also joined the call. Thank you, Jeff.
Great. Thank you very much, Gwen. So the agenda for the call will be to, and I might be switching one or two things around here, to start with just an update on statements of interest, not to discuss what should be in a statement of interest, but rather to discuss who we have received statements of interest for, who we have not yet, and to discuss any questions that people have about the statements of interest that have been submitted. Then we'll go to the agenda item of selecting a chair of the PDP work team, and then followed by a discussion of the document that was sent around either yesterday or the day before yesterday on the first cut at a work plan, which will also address, you know, questions and issues about next steps. So is there anything anyone else wants to, and I'm sorry, and then finally we'll end with a discussion of calls and you know, logistics about future calls. Is there anything anybody else wants to add to the agenda? Okay, hearing silence, I'm going to, it seems that we have about 24 people in this PDP work team. The wiki needs to, Glenn is going to update the wiki to make sure that everyone's name is on the wiki. I think we're missing a few that may have joined fairly recently. I'm going to turn it over to Glenn to just talk about who we still need statements of interest for, and then I'll open it up to anybody if they have any questions.
Thank you, Jeff. We are still requiring a statement of interest from Brian Winterfeld. And for the ISP members, Jamie Wagner and Antonio Taveras, I will use their statements of interest that they have provided for another work team. And if anybody has any changes or updates to make, could you let me have them as soon as possible? You can send an updated list out after this call. I see we've just had Cheryl Langdon Orr join us.
Yes.
For the ALAC.
I was going to say, Alan needed to send his alternate. He's going to be busy for a small part of this meeting, if not all of it.
Great. Well,
Thank you.
Welcome, Cheryl. Does anybody have any questions right now about any of the statements of interest? Glenn has sent around the ones that we've received, so everyone should at least was able to access them through a link. Has anyone gotten any questions about this? Okay, any concerns?
Jeff, it's Marilyn.
Sure.
I do have a concern. I think we need to be aware that many people do not take the time to click on and download links. So at the start of a group, and when there's an update, I think that the document probably ought to be posted rather than just relying on people clicking on links, because the purpose of making an interest statement is to make it clear what one's interests and potential conflicts are, and when there's an update, that might be significant. So, this is a view that I have about ICANN and its statements overall, but I, particularly because there are 24 members, that means that people have to go through and click on each link in order to get the detail. The second point I'll just make is you can tell me, I don't think it belongs in this group, but I think that as we think about the PDP process and the overall policy development process, there needs to be some standard guidance for, particularly for new people who are coming into the process, about what needs to be included in an issue statement, in an interest statement.
Okay, well, I think, Marilyn, I think your point about sending them in kind of a Word document or a document form and posting it to a list is a good idea. Glenn, does that sound like something you can do easily, or is to form some document to send that around?
We've got a template that the policy team has set up, Jeff.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I was actually talking about Marilyn's first comment, which was, is there a way to combine everyone's statements of interest into one document and then post that around instead of posting a link?
Oh, sorry. Yes, well, that is what I have tried to do by sending out the email to the list so that it's on the open public list, and all the links have been, the contents of the links have been put in the last email.
Okay. I have not gotten to that yet, but I'm actually looking at it. Marilyn, did you get that email? It was sent, there was a final revised. There was one sent out last night for us on the East Coast in the U.S.
No, I haven't. I mean, I'm sure I did, and I'll take a look at it. So that answers my question. Thank you.
Great. And the second one, Marilyn, I think you had a second question in there, which was, there is a standard form template that we've kind of all weighed in on as part of the PPSC and OSC work teams, kind of as a joint effort. And that template does, I think, I hope, for people that have filled out the statements of interest forms, I hope sets out exactly what we're kind of looking for. If anyone that's filled out a statement of interest that got that form thinks it was unclear, if you want to, does anyone on this call think it was kind of unclear or think we need to clarify certain things?
Jeff, it's Cheryl Langdonor here.
Sure. Yeah.
It's not that I'm unclear in any way, it's just that this happens to be a topic I'm particularly passionate about. One way that we've got around, I think, part of the follow-on question that Marilyn was posing, and is by having as a standing agenda item in some of the boards that I'm on, the simple matter of continuous disclosure. Therefore, it's always an opportunity and a salutary reminder for everyone involved, regardless of when they come into a process, that it's also incumbent on people to update it by a statement if something changes.
Okay, I think we can pretty easily do that. It's just include as a standing agenda item updates, if there are any updates, and there may not be. So it's something we could probably quickly get through for each call. So I think that's a good idea.
It's usually a zero-time agenda item, but being there just makes it glaringly obvious that it's incumbent on participants to put things on the table.
Right. Does everyone hear a beep, or is it just me?
I hear it. Yes, everybody. And I've asked the operator to.
Okay. I thought it was me going crazy here. Actually, I thought it was my handset at first that was just running out of battery, but I guess not. Okay, we'll try to figure out what that is. Hopefully soon. But in the meantime, we'll try to continue through this. Is there anyone else that's got any questions on statements of interest or concerns? Okay, I think with that, I'm going to throw the call over to Margie to talk about the chair, selecting a chair.
Sure, thanks, Jeff. We have a nomination for Jeff to be chair of this work team, and I believe there are no other nominations that I've seen on the list. Does anyone on the call have any nominations for chair? Okay, so it sounds like there are no other nominations. So Jeff has been seconded, and I think the best thing to do would be to go through the list and just get an affirmative yes or no to be to nominate or to select Jeff as chair, and then we'll follow up with others on the list as well, just to get their vote. So I have the list in front of me. I will go down. Paul, I guess you're the first one. Yes or no?
Yes.
James?
Yes.
Mike Rodenbaugh?
Yes.
David Maher?
Yes.
Rolf?
You mean me?
Wolf Ulrich.
Yeah, okay. Yes.
I'm sorry. Marilyn?
Yes.
Christina?
Yes.
Cheryl Langdonor?
Yes.
And is there anyone else I've missed? Okay, so I guess Jeff, you're confirmed as chair of the work team, and I'll also send an email out to the rest of the team that wasn't on the call.
Okay, thank you very much, Margie. Thank you, everyone. Again, just to state for the record that my role as chair here, I am a GTLD registry operator. My statement of interest is online or has also been sent around to the group, but I'm here as the chair and not as a representative of the registry constituency, and that's David Maher. And if there are any concerns, there are mechanisms. I'd ask that you bring them up with me, but there are mechanisms also to deal with anyone who's got a concern about that. I'm going to try my best to be neutral, but I'm human and certainly fallible, so I hope that you guys can help me out and point out any concerns that you guys do have. With that, I want to move on to the next agenda item, which is to discuss the draft that was sent around by, I can't remember if it was Mariko or Margie. It was sent around by ICANN staff 2 days ago, on Tuesday, yes. Although for some of you in Europe and in Asia, it was probably, I guess, early Wednesday that it was sent around. Just a couple notes on this draft, and I want to thank ICANN staff, particularly Margie and Marika, for putting a lot of work into this. This is just a start-off for a discussion point. It's not any kind of, it's got no official status. It's not a work team document at this point, but it's just to try to get on paper some of the ideas and concepts that we discussed at the face-to-face meeting in Mexico City, and to kind of put some words into what an idea that Liz Williams had during that meeting, and then it was followed up by Bertrand to kind of put things into certain stages. You'll notice that in this document, and I'm hoping everyone, did anyone on the call, did anyone not get it? I know it's also posted on the wiki as well. Wow. Okay, the goal of this document is to really develop the tasks and figure out the milestones and timing so that we can just adequately plan the activities of the work team from here through the completion of our work. You'll notice that there are two overall tasks that we came up with. The tasks are not meant to be necessarily chronological. In other words, you don't have to do task one and then do task two. It's quite possible and likely that both of those tasks that are here will be done concurrently, as the second task relates more to the overall issues and overall themes that came up from our discussions in Mexico City, including the brainstorming session that was held earlier that morning. And the first task is really to develop a breakdown of future policy development process, including relevant subcategories to serve as a basis for further work. So what we did is we tried to take all the topics and issues that came up as a result of those slides and the brainstorming session and put them into essentially five different categories that we had discussed in Mexico City. The five categories were, you know, the planning or initiation stage of a policy development process, and whether PDP is the right term to use at that stage is an overall issue. Then what do you do after the initiation as far as proposal, reviewing the proposals that have been received, and different questions about voting thresholds in order to launch the formal PDP, if that's what we call it in the future. The third item is the policy development work itself. Some of that, or a lot of that, is actually work that's going to be looked at by the working group work team, but there are certainly items that we will need to consider that are more within our scope, and certainly ones we'll coordinate with the working group work team. The fourth element is, okay, now that we have a policy development process and the outcome is a policy, then how do we go about adopting that policy at the council level and above? And then how does the implementation of that policy work, and what is the intersection between implementation and the policy development process? And the fifth item is, okay, now that we have implementation of a policy, you know, how do we go about assessing the effectiveness of the policy and assessing compliance activities associated with that policy? Does anyone have questions on those five different phases? Think there should be more? Think phases should be combined? If anyone's got any questions? Okay, and while I'm kind of on the topic, it's a little bit of a divergence, but since I'm asking for comments, one of the things that we've done with other work groups or working groups or work teams has been to use a software tool associated with Adobe called Adobe Connect, which actually is kind of much more interactive than the systems we use now, and would actually allow people to chat amongst others in the group. Will allow people to virtually raise their hand, so I'll know, and other people will know if someone's got a question, and it's much easier to do a queue for that. It's something that I think we'll talk about as one of our last logistics items, but it's something I just wanted to bring up. So now that we have the five phases, what we tried to do, and ICANN staff did a pretty good job in doing this, is to take the issues that we had come up with during the brainstorming session and put them into categories. Again, this is a draft document for discussion. You know, if you all think that we missed some questions or missed some issues, put them in the wrong category, or they're in multiple categories, you know, this is the kind of feedback that we're looking for, and you know, after the call. So I don't know if people have had a chance to read it and have any questions. Is everyone awake? It's fine. I know you all just got the document, and we just sent it around a couple days ago. This is open. It's not like we're closing this document after the call, so you'll have plenty of time, and I would hope that you all provide feedback in writing.
And Jeff, I would think also, obviously, as we go through our work, you know, this can change. Things can be added, moved around, et cetera, obviously, right?
Absolutely. This is, again, this is the basis of this is to form a work plan as kind of the basis for what we do in the future, but it is a living, breathing document. It can be changed at any time by the group, and like I said, if we find, you know, as we're exploring these issues, that, wait a minute, this one issue that was put in this one phase actually belongs in another or overlaps with another, we certainly can go around or if there are issues that come up that we just didn't think of now, but we think of as we're doing the work. Absolutely, we can include those. That's what it's meant. It's meant as a guide.
Jeff, it's Marilyn. I'd like to be in the queue.
Absolutely. Anyone else after Marilyn, just to get a queue? Okay, Marilyn.
I'm assuming, just to clarify, that since this is being recorded, can I just clarify? Will there actually be a transcript of this as well as the recording?
Yes, there will be, Marilyn, and it will be posted on the GNSO. Council calendar page with the.
So, okay, so you'd like us to introduce ourselves whenever we speak then?
Great idea, Marilyn. Thank you very much. Yes.
Okay, so this is Marilyn Kay. Jeff, my comment, I'm not sure where this belongs, but one of the things, and perhaps I missed it, but one of the things I do not see is the data gathering, analysis, economic assessment, and sort of the development of the neutral fact-based white paper about an issue that has been talked about not only within the GNSO Council, but in numerous public forums with the board about improvements to the policy development process and called for by the GAC. And I don't see that in here unless I just missed it.
Well, I think, and then Margie or Marika can jump in, I think that overall topic is in the planning phase in A, and it's the last bullet, but it could probably be expanded to, I think you worded it much better than we did at this point, but it says build in flexibility to allow for additional research and or fact-finding.
I'm sorry, Jeff, I can't, you know, the other request I would make is that we, in documents, we need to increase the use of numbers or letters instead of bullets, so you're going to have to tell me where I am.
Okay, it's the second column, in issues to be addressed, and there are now are bullets. It would be the last bullet before B.
Okay, I read that and did not, that sounded to me like, you know, I could do a Google search. I am really talking about taking up, and you know, perhaps this is a topic to come back to, but I think we're seeing now the evidence of the failure to do an economic analysis on a PDP that has now been approved and we're trying to implement. So I'm really talking about extensive changes to the data gathering, analysis, issue paper development, et cetera. And, you know, we can just flag that and come back to talking about it in more detail. But I do consider it a major gap.
Yep. You know, I think we've taken your comment, and I agree with you, Marilyn. I think we should expand and put other issues. We thought we captured that, but obviously we didn't. So we'll put in extra bullet points to make sure that that's captured. Do you agree that would be part of the planning / initiation phase?
So, you know, this is obviously it takes place before we make decisions to create a PDP. And if that's what we're now calling the planning initiation stage, I'm fine with that.
Okay.
So, can I, this is Margie, let me just follow up with Marilyn's point. So are you suggesting, Marilyn, that there would be an economic analysis every time in the initiation phase, or merely that it's a topic that should be addressed depending on you know, what the PDP would be covering? I'm just trying to understand whether, you know, that's really something that happens in the initiation phase or more in the work phase.
Well, first of all, you know, as someone who, it's Marilyn speaking, as someone who managed a policy development process for a multinational corporation, we made a big investment in, you know, much more detailed research. And so I think there may be people where an economic analysis might not be required, but other kinds of analysis would be required. And so maybe, you know, maybe we just need to spend some time thinking about the kinds of research. If one were to look at an OECD scoping paper, you know, you'd get a better sense of the kinds of research that sophisticated, thorough analysis would require. Now, that may not be necessary for every PDP, but, you know, we need to have a template of the kinds of analysis that is needed and research that is needed so that we can then factor in what the additional staff costs, resources, et cetera, will be to have an informed PDP process.
So, and to add to that, this is something I got from the joint, I forgot what it was called, Advisory Committee Supporting Organization session that was in Mexico City on the policy development process. I think it was a statement made by Mason, if I remember correctly, where he was talking about an impact analysis on the different parties, either from creating a policy or the impact in not creating a policy. So I think that's also one of the analysis that could be done. It's not just economic. I think, as you said, Marilyn, that was kind of one example of the types of analysis.
Right. And so, you know, right now, the present statements from the constituencies ask for the constituencies to speculate, really, about the impact on them. But we have to remember that many more parties, however I would say that, than are presently members of ICANN's constituencies are affected by ICANN's policies, and we can just use the very broad and diverse response to the GTLD guidebook as an example of that. So, yeah, Jeff, I think you're right. There would be a list of examples. They might not be all-inclusive, but they would provide a framework to come back to.
Right, and an impact analysis or something like that at this stage would be a lot different than an impact analysis after or during the policy development phase, where maybe a solution to the issue is thought of. You know, that's a different impact analysis than an initial one, which could be impact of, like I said, having a policy or impact on consumers of not having a policy, right? It could be any of those types of things.
And so then I would just say, it's Marilyn again, that keeping the last bullet still remains relevant, because there may be during the PDP, you would need the flexibility, if needed, to ask for additional research or fact-finding.
Right.
Can I get in the queue, please, Jeff? Cheryl Langdonell.
Sure, Cheryl. Anyone else after Cheryl? Okay, Cheryl.
Just to echo and support exactly where this conversation is going, and putting on my consumer advocate hat for a moment, here within the telco industry in Australia, something we're very keen on at the moment is the requirement for industry to come up with consumer impact statements in the prior planning stage for code and guideline development. So it will fit very comfortably where we're heading in consumer land with what you're discussing now.
Okay, great. Any other questions or comments on that topic? So another thing that came up, that's something that the team can discuss is, and I don't know where this would fall if it's in one of the bullets, is some people have suggested, again, I'm not issuing judgment on this, some people have suggested that a workshop at an ICANN meeting is something that should happen during a planning or initiation phase, you know, to kind of get more people to weigh in on some of the issues that might arise. Margie, Marika, do you think that fits into one of the bullets we already have, or is that another one? Well, we'll take that down as another one to create a bullet or in our list there.
Jeff, it's Marilyn. I think that's a really good idea. If the workshop can be done in a way that it is broadly informative and not position-based, and maybe we would want to describe the purpose of the workshop as being an informational workshop. Because if we were just thinking about, if we go to opinions, that will negate the neutrality of the learning experience.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and it was kind of something that we tried to do with the brain. It's like the brainstorming session that we had for this group.
Right.
It was not the solution, but really to come up with the issues that may need to be examined.
Right.
I think that's good. Anybody else have anything at the initiation planning? And again, this document is open, so after the call, If you haven't read it, or even if you have and you have other ideas, then we can certainly add those.
So Jeff, it's Marilyn. I have one more, and I'm sorry about this. I've said it before, but I'm going to flag it again. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 is called the role of the Office of the General Counsel. I think a better formulation of this is the ongoing role of legal advice to the policy development process.
So, say that again, the ongoing
role of legal advice to the policy development process.
Right. Okay. Anybody have any issues with that? Okay. Margie, Marika, I think we can certainly make that change.
Yeah, that's fine.
And I kind of, you know, thinking and looking at it again, I'm looking at it, and I think you're right. I think we know what the role of the Office of the General Counsel is, but I think your wording change makes sense. Anybody else on that phase?
I have nothing on that phase, but I'll let you know I'm on the call now.
Ah, well, we can ask you now if we could put you on the spot and make you come up with something.
I'm not sure what the question is, so.
That's even better. Your answer would be much better than
42.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, huh? Sorry, that was an inside reference, I guess, for those that have read the book.
We got it, Jeff.
Well, you know, not maybe everyone has it. It also seems during the call that Jean-Christophe has joined as well, so welcome.
Yes, I am, and quite pleased of the literature reference, Jeff.
Okay, so what we're doing now is going through the document that was sent around, the work plan document. It is a straw man document. It is meant to be changed constantly, but it's meant to be as a guide to developing the final work plan, and even after the final work plan is developed, when we're looking at these issues, if there are changes that need to be made, that we can make those, certainly make those changes. There were five phases that we kind of brainstormed in Mexico City to look at in the overall policy process, and one of the things that we're going to need to work on is when you use the term PDP, or policy development process, because actually there's a lot of work to be done before there's a formal launch of a policy development process. And we just talked about some questions and issues in the first phase, which is what we've called the planning and initial phase. But then the second phase, which we're on now, is the proposal review and voting threshold phase. So a little background on this one is, there were topics discussed as far as, well, look, there could be a lot of ideas, a lot of good ideas that come through the planning initiation phase. Should there be some sort of, this is my own words, not anybody else's, should there be some sort of intake process or prioritization amongst all the issues that come in? If so, who should do that, and how should that be done? And once you get that, you know, there are some voting thresholds that have already been approved by the board, part of the new improvement process, but there's lots of questions even around those numbers that have been approved. For example, you know, whatever the, and I didn't commit this to memory yet, but whatever the voting threshold is amongst the new GNSO Council for initiation of, for the creation of an issues report, you know, those thresholds may have been set, but, you know, there's plenty of issues around that as far as, you know, is it the vote, is it that percentage of the amount of council members that are present, or is it of total members, you know, how that all is done. So there's a list of questions or issues that we've gleaned from the brainstorming, the first one being how do you maintain flexibility on launching a policy development process, is there some sort of appeals mechanism in the case where a GNSO votes against initiating a PDP by an advisory committee or other supporting organization. Because right now, remember, it says that if another supporting organization or advisory committee or even the board itself wants an issues report, then it's done. There's no GNSO council intervention in that process. The issues report is automatically drafted. That doesn't mean a PDP is automatically launched. It just means that there's an issues report drafted. You know, what do people think about that?
Jeff, to interrupt, my recollection is that if the board requested the issues report, the council doesn't have a choice.
I may be wrong on that, but that's my recollection.
Yes, and I believe it's the same way it may be the same way with an advisory committee as well.
Advisory committee, the council still has to vote as if they initiated it with a low threshold.
Okay.
My recollection is that if a the board requests the issue report, there's no choice but the council will have to go ahead. That's my recollection. I'd have to check.
Okay, so that this phase is meant to look at those issues.
Jeff, this is Marilyn. That is a factual statement. And I'm sorry, who was just speaking?
Talon.
Talon. That is true. The board request, and this is Marilyn, the board request will generate an issues report without further intervention.
Both the board and the advisory committee will generate an issues report. My recollection is that the council doesn't have to vote on the to initiate the PEP with a threshold if it was initiated by the board. But
it's Liz Gasser. Actually, it's the board or an advisory committee.
Right.
They do not vote.
Right.
They only vote when it's council initiated.
So that's again. Then I'll get back to I think it was
that
Maryland.
Sure. We're going
to
have a vote this week on or next week on starting a PDP for an issues report requested by an advisory committee. There's three different paragraphs in the bylaws. In any case, we can check that. We don't need to.
Right. So and that's the things to examine during as part of this proposal review and voting threshold phase. Those are the issues that the work team will discuss. Marilyn, did you have something else to add to that?
I did. I think we probably ought to. That's why it's going to be really important to think about what is needed to validate what goes into the issues report. You know, if we're burning staff resources, as treasured as you all are, I just want to be on the record on that. If we're burning staff resources, we have some amount of awareness that, you know, we have X number of staff hours and staff can keep us informed. But if we're building a, not a bicycle, but a small truck, meaning we're going to go out and do additional research, et cetera, we may want to look at the issues report process a little differently as well. And think about whether it should be divided into a preliminary stage in which initial research is done and then more detailed research is authorized, while keeping in mind we have to be careful about elongating the time frames too much.
Right. Anybody else have comments on that?
It's Alan. I just checked the bylaws and I'm correct. An issue raised by the board goes into a PDP without a vote of council. The other two require the low threshold vote.
Okay. So there's a lot of issues that have come up even now, and I'm sure more in the future that the PDP team will address. The third phase is the actual policy development work itself, and the questions that the issues that came up during the brainstorm session that we had, where well, how do you maximize the effectiveness of working groups? How do you prioritize PDPs? How do you link policy development with ICANN strategic planning and budgeting? Timing of the policy development work that's done by the working group, and should implementation guidelines impact and feasibility be part of the work of a working group? A lot of this does overlap with the working group work team, but again, it's certainly expected that this would overlap. And once we come up with a final list of issues, one of the things I'd like to do is take this to the working group work team and see where there's overlap and what issues they're working on, what issues we're working on, and provide a mechanism where both teams could comment on it, but not necessarily both teams working them independently on their own would just seem a little bit inefficient. Is there any questions on that phase?
Jeff, it's Marilyn. I do have a question. You know, and it's the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's the last bullet point. The fifth bullet point. Somewhere in the policy development process, and we have done this on. When I was on the council, we did this on some of the PDPs where the council worked as a whole, so I was familiar with this. We had, I'm going to call them feasibility discussions or implementation discussions with what is now called the services team. Would that fit into the fifth bullet?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about, Marilyn. Like when we had a transfers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember if it was a task force or whatever.
Right. Right.
We had a transfers group that came up with the policy.
Right.
And then we had a separate group that was established that actually said, okay, here's the policy. Let's all as a community figure out how we're going to implement it.
Right.
Whereas today what's done, or at least for the past few policies, is that the policy is created, and then the staff is directed to come up with the implementation. And yes, there's a public comment period, but it's not done by the working group. Is that kind of what your point was?
No, I actually, and I think I was the chair of that task force group, but not of the implementation. I still think implementation belongs with the services team. I'm actually talking about in the policy development process and in the work of the working group, making sure that there's interaction with the services team who are going to have to take the policy and turn it into implementable activities, and making sure that there is a flow and ongoing appropriate interaction across with Kirk services team. Because, you know, I think we can all see that, and we did some of that in the new GTLD process. At various times, Kurt and his team set in the policy development process. So that was what I was really getting at.
Oh, okay. So just to clarify for the recording and the transcript, when you're saying the services team, you're talking about ICANN's operational or services team as opposed to a registrar or registry service team.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so to elaborate on that, I do understand your point and certainly would expect that a part of that process might also be a dialogue with those who are going to have to implement a policy change or who are going to be affected by a policy change. Oftentimes that may go below, I'm thinking of an ISO stack maybe, that may go beyond the contracted parties. And so one thing we have to think about is, does the impact assessment get to that, or is it important to have a different kind of interaction with representatives of parties who will be directly affected during the work group process, or are we going to assume the work group composition will take care of that? And that's not a question for us, probably.
Right. Okay. Anyone have questions on that? Any other comments on that third stage before we go to the adoption and implementation? Now, these two next phases are, we don't have too many bullets here, and we're looking for guidance from the group to help us create more bullet points and issues. And it was only briefly touched upon, although we all kind of recognized the importance of it, and it was kind of late in our discussions. But the two phases are the adoption and implementation of the policy, and then the last phase is the assessment of the effectiveness of the policy and also assessment of compliance of with the policy. These, like I said, need to be expanded, but I think they're all crucial in what happens as part of a policy development process. So in other words, when the working group makes a recommendation, one issue that we talked about is when the working group makes a recommendation, generally it's been given to the GNSO Council as a whole as opposed to allowing the council or others to take pieces of the recommendation and not the whole, do you have to reject it as a whole if you disagree with one part of it? Again, that's all up for discussion and something that the team will definitely need to think about. Yes.
So, right now, if the GNSO Council approves a policy recommendation and sends it to the board by consensus, well, by any means, the board cannot change a policy recommendation, but it can send it back for more work. Are you including in this example, the idea that the council could say, okay, you've given us recommendations A through F. We understand and can endorse A through D. We're sending you back to E and F for further work?
Something like that. It may not even be not agree. It may be the working group came up with, let's say there were 10 issues that the working group was supposed to address, and it turned out that 8 of them had consensus support and 2 of them didn't at that point. Could the GNSO Council say, well, the 8 that did, we want to put through to the board. The 2 that we didn't, either the council could say, we're done and close the working group or send it back. That, again, I'm not offering any judgment as to what I think. I'm just saying that that's what's come up.
Jeff, it's Alan.
Sure.
It's clear when you look at the GTLD process that what Marilyn described of, you know, accept all or send back was the philosophy that was being used at the board GNSO interaction level, but it's clearly proven that's not acceptable on the at the real implementation level. Things may not be implementable, and I think we need to build a process into this new PDP process that allows for that to happen and doesn't say that the board cannot make a change at all, but staff can. And I think we need to address that and make some more pragmatic rules that allow for more interaction and more alteration of the policy as it proceeds.
And balance that with the need of, you know, a lot of the stuff went up for public comment, and if you do alter it in a way, does that change what people commented on? Right? Is that change of such a nature that people that may have commented one way would now comment a different way?
Well, that's one way of looking at it. But even if you look at today's process, there are additional public comment periods, and maybe what we're doing today is the perfect way of doing it. But I think we need to document what the process is for making changes in the details of the policy after the GNSO has approved it, or to handle a case you're saying where the GSO may not give full approval to all the details. I think we need to look at that and put down in place some rules which actually can be implemented instead of doing an on-the-fly modification of the rules as we go, as we are doing now.
Right.
It's Marilyn. I think we should talk more about this as well, but I'm just going to say that policy is different from implementation procedures and guidelines. And very often people who develop policy also want to become very granular and become in charge of implementing the policy to make sure it does. So I think we have to be careful about distinguishing between what policy development is and what implementation and enforcement of policy is, and not put the council in the position of taking on the latter two things. At the same time, I understand the interest in talking about this further, but I'm cautious about the nature of a policy council wanting to actually take on, and cautious about the board both wanting to take on the implementation aspect.
I have a comment on that, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm sorry, who was that?
Alan.
Okay, sure. Sorry, Alan. Yep.
Two things. Number one, there have been certain cases where policy gets changed during implementation because of perhaps unimplementability of the policy or for other reasons. The more recent one is our policy was not deemed to be satisfactory to the GAC, and therefore staff perhaps unilaterally made changes. And I think we need to address that kind of process and formalize it more. And second of all, we can only make policy on things that are within the picket fence. Although we're a policy council, my understanding from all the discussions we've had is, and including that with council, that we have the right to make recommendations to the board and staff, even if they're not policy, if we believe they are important to carrying out policy and to implementing policy.
So it's Marilyn again. I have a clarifying question. I would say, as someone who spent a lot of time, Alan, on that last issue when I was on the council, I think that that is right, even outside of the picket fence. Council, based on stakeholder, hopefully strong support, could put forward a recommendation that is not considered consensus policy. And that means that it's optional rather than mandatory in terms of being implemented in the contract. Could you, what is the example that you have of a consensus policy where the board did not accept the GNSO Council's recommendation?
Well, an example, no, the board has accepted it.
But
in general, the, you know, an example is the geographic regions aspect of the GTLDs that the board accepted, but that's not what we have in the implementation.
The geographic regions is still a working effort, right?
Well, yes, but at this point in time.
All right, so
there,
we have.
There's an issue. There are other ones also. But
yeah, let's save that for the discussion of the actual substance. But I think we've captured. Well, I'll ask Marika and Margie. Have you guys captured the issues?
Yeah. I'll update to include some of these bullets.
This is Liz. I don't know if it would be helpful to share an example that I think might be less that might be more illustrative of one concern that we're talking about vis-a-vis making policy versus implementation that is not focused on new GTLDs. But in a recent example, there was a PDP on domain tasting where a drafting team many of you participated in worked on a resolution that was ultimately supported by the council and then adopted by the board, in which there were terms that were not, that the drafting team didn't define. They were terms that, or they defined to a point, but not completely. Like the two terms that come to mind are extraordinary circumstances and reoccur regularly. So as part of the implementation, staff had to define those terms, basically, or decide how those terms would be implemented as part of the responsibility for implementation. So the drafting group at the policy level, and Alan and Mike and several of you wrestled with these questions, Christina, about how far should the drafting team, how far should the council's policy activities go in defining terms that are that were controversial at the time and where that different people and different constituencies had different views about. And at some point, I think, after a point of definition, the group decided not to go further and to essentially leave it as an implementation matter. So that's it, something, just maybe an illustrative example we can hold over to the deeper discussion that doesn't focus on new GTLDs, but is maybe a judgment call about how far does the group feel comfortable or is able to reach a consensus on a particular term or definition as part of an overall recommendation, and where some judgment is deferred to the implementation activity to develop an implementation that makes sense from those terms.
I can certainly give my opinion on that one. I think that one ended up quite reasonably. You know, any law should be written in general enough terms that it can be implemented and implemented based on the needs of the day. It turns out, in fact, that we probably overspecified because of some things that have happened since then, and maybe we could have been a little bit wiser in how we did that. But I think that level of who does what was a good call.
So it might be a good example, I guess,
yeah,
of maybe one that worked, or where, of how you draw a line in terms of what the policy effort should define, how specific it should be, versus some judgment and discretion that the implementation process has, versus another situation where too much may have been deferred to the implementation. So,
and that actually is a good transition to the last phase, which is the assessment of policy effectiveness and compliance. If I remember the discussions in that group, and I was a member of that group, it was, well, we're struggling with defining it, but we're going to build in a assessment process you know, that within 6 months after it's implemented, we can get back together and see whether we truly need to refine it even further. It was kind of, and people can jump in, it was kind of one of those things that said, look, it's really tough for us to define. We want to get this policy in place. Let's just kick that over to the assessment analysis to see if our fears or our concerns have played out.
Interestingly, Jeff, I completely support that flow. We have absolutely no process right now to reopen the issue other than initiating a new issues report.
It's Marilyn. You know, this sounds like something we lost, Jeff, we lost track of, because we talked about this during the time that Bruce was chair, as, you know, instituting this occasional assessment of, you know, policy. But I think Alan's right. I don't think we actually ever came up with how we would pull a policy back into reconsideration. I think you'd have to go back into, you know, if you're just talking about updating, maybe that's something that the PDP team should talk about. You know, as policies age in a company or in an organization like ICANN, what is the periodic review? What is the process? Does the services staff identify a number of gaps, document those gaps, send them back to the policy council? Does the community have the ability to identify the gaps and say, this policy needs to be refreshed or updated? And what would a truncated approach to, you know, to dealing with a policy improvement process be?
I mean, a good example is on the domain tasting one, where we put in place a process that says registrars can exceed the 5% limit if there are exceptional circumstances they couldn't predict. We've now seen cases where they could predict them, and we want them to do it anyway. And the words didn't cover that. You know, where registrars are now doing defensive registrations to make sure that phishing attacks don't work.
Yes, yeah, so let me.
But, you know, so as we're going through this, I think we need to think about, if we're going to have a formal assessment process, how do we reopen the issue without going back to square one?
So for the transcript purposes and for people on the call, what Alan's talking about relates to the Configure situation that's going on now, where there have been algorithms that have been broken, where we know that on certain days, certain criminal forces will register in the latest variant 50,000 domain names a day for the purpose of using those names to spread malware, viruses, worms, and you name it, all the good stuff we love. So one of the defensive mechanisms that some have used, you know, some registrars have affirmatively registered those names and in theory could delete those names within a 5-day period, but that would put them over the threshold. And while the policy talks about fraud, you know, an extraordinary circumstance would be to, if there was fraud committed on the registrar could show that fraud, they can get an exemption, but I don't believe we thought of the prevention, you know, registering names to prevent fraud. Which is a different situation. So that's kind of just to clue everyone in, just for those that weren't following that discussion and reference. Another issue that was discussed was, so when the GNSO Council approves a policy and it's sent to the board, the question is, how is it sent to the board? The staff write their own report to summarize the policy for the board to read. Is that a good idea? Is that a bad idea? Should the council, or should the council have work with staff? Should the working group work with staff to develop that to the board? All those kinds of questions, again, not offering any opinion one way or the other, but that might want to be looked at by the work team. So is there any other questions on those five phases? Again, this document's being thrown out for comment, and so if you have future additions, changes, suggestions, let us know. The second task, I want to just briefly do this because I know we've already been on the phone for an hour, is to, you know, there were overarching issues that didn't really neatly fit into one phase over another, and so was kind of put into the separate chart. You know, those issues include things like the development of definitions, and I kind of hinted at this earlier, but, you know, what is meant by the policy development process? We use that as an overarching term. We use that in two ways. We use it as an overarching term for the entire process from beginning to end, but it's also used as the specific process that is voted on by the council after an issues report, but before implementation. Right, it's that phase in between there as the policy development process. The terms are very confusing, and the question is, do we come up with new terms? What does it actually mean? Things like that. Discussion of definitions between, as Marilyn had discussed earlier, and I think Alan, you know, there's discussions on picket fence and what is the role of the policy process with respect to things that fall within the picket fence or outside. Clarification of terminology between a request for an issues report and PDP. We throw the terms around constituency. We also throw terms around stakeholder. What's the difference and how do they play into the policy process? And what's meant when we use terms like in scope and not in scope as these relate to the voting threshold, right? Because in the improvements process, there's one threshold for voting to initiate a PDP in its classic sense, if something is, quote, in scope versus out of scope, but what does that mean? Or in scope versus not in scope?
It's Alan. Marika and I have just been having that discussion with relation to the post-expiration domain name recovery, and the terms are not being used apparently by council in the way that I thought, and it is something we need to be more explicit on. Because out of scope apparently is a different meaning than with outside the picket fence. So I think anything we're going to put our name in as a recommendation for new policy, for a new PDP process, and that includes also what do we call a PDP process and what do we call the previous stages, I think we need to be explicit and try to make them as bulletproof as possible, because clearly there's nothing but a veil of confusion over all of this.
Right. Anyone else have any questions on that? So the other topics that came up were overall issues, things like translations. At what point are translations provided? How do they fit into the comment periods without, you know, delaying the PDP? There were issues of overall timing of the PDP. How long should each phase be, or how long should the total timeline be, with also allowing flexibility to build in additional stages if we need it, like workshops or requests for specific information, right? We had talked about a difference between public comments on a solution versus public comments on the issues. Things like, well, how do you align the policy development process with contractual requirements and the bylaws? And another topic, overall topic, was development of standard materials. You know, is there a form that a charter should be? Although I think that might be within the working group. Requests for issues reports, things like that. Do we develop a form, or is there an electronic submission process when you want to request that an issue be brought up? So those are some of the other issues. Anybody, it sounds like Marilyn may have a question on that or a comment. Nope. All right. Anyone else have comments on those issues?
I think there are things that we need to discuss, and I don't think I want to go into the details now, but I think there are some semi-substantive issues there.
Right. So then what I want to kind of get into now is logistics and how we tackle these issues. There's a lot of issues here. There's a lot of work to be done, and we need to come up with next steps and timing. So once we, you know, the next week or two, once we kind of get the bullets and or issues into a, I don't want to say final because it won't ever really be final. I'm sure there are issues that we haven't even thought of. But once we get it to a comfortable stage is to, okay, what do we do next? And I want to get people's thoughts on, there were some people in Mexico City that thought breaking into individual teams to tackle some of these issues, at least initially, was a good idea. Others thought that that was a bad idea because every phase affects every other phase. From a purely logistical standpoint, there are 24 people on this work team, and everybody working on every issue just seems to be not very feasible. And it would be great if it were possible at some point to break the group down into sub-teams to at least initially tackle these, with the caveat that everybody will have a chance to weigh in on everything. Maybe a good way to go, just again for feasibility's sake. So I want to kind of throw that out there as far as what people in the group think for logistics.
It's Alan.
Yep, Alan.
I think what you've just described is close to my model. That is, we get small groups or individuals, depending on the section, to draft either bullets of the issues that need to be discussed before something a document can be drafted, or draft a straw man directly, which can be talked about. To have vague discussions, I think, is not productive enough, and we need something on paper to talk to on each of these subsections. I don't favor breaking down into groups and sending them away to do something final. We do have 24 people on this group, but not all of them are going to be equally active. So I would favor trying to break it down, get small groups of volunteers or individuals to draft something that we can talk about and critique.
Right, and on that also, just I talked about with Marika and Margie, is doing this chart with the current PDP process as an example. So what we would do is for you guys is say, okay, in the planning initiation phase, this is what the current PDP says, so that people could see something in front of them and be able to say, oh yeah, I like that, I don't like that, it doesn't include this. And maybe use that as a tool to go forward.
That's good.
So I think we'll take that on as just our own interpretation. Again, it's our own interpretation of what goes on now, as opposed to people may differ. So I thought we would do that. I'll leave that question open because, you know, for people to think about on the list and comment on. Now, Liz Williams sent around a note that was just sent around a few hours before the call. I'm not sure if everyone read it, and I just had a chance to skim it. But her view is ultimately that we would develop some sort of document like the guidebook that came out for new GTLDs in a sense of, I want to paraphrase. Let me go to the actual email. So she wants to see something like a PDP guidebook produced that has all the information in it that any participant in a PDP process would want to use. This would be an online document that enabled anyone to initiate the PDP process electronically. It would incorporate the bylaws, rules of procedures, and other documents. So again, she submitted that comment. That may in fact be what we might strive for. Ultimately, I think it's a little too far down the road to actually think about at this moment, but that may be an ultimate deliverable. And if people have comments on that, certainly put them on the list.
Jeff, it's Alan. I have two things that I think we need to do up front, and maybe I've missed it, and some of them have been done already.
Okay.
Number one is we need to have a discussion early as to what part of this is going to be done in the bylaws and what is outside of the bylaws. I mean, right now, the whole process in detail is in the bylaws, which makes it very, very difficult to change. There's good argument for putting things in the bylaws so they can't be
changed without due process. On the other hand, that may not be the right place for it. And the second one is, what really has to be done by June?
I mean, we have a flawed PDP process, but we're still making use of it, and we're still producing policy. And the question is, what aspects of the current policy must be changed because of the change in council structure? And we may need to make some interim changes quickly in time for June, and then reinstitute the brand new PDP at a much later date.
Okay. My recommendation on that is, Margie and Marika, can we create that, the last item that Alan talked about as kind of a task three?
Yeah, actually, that's a good point, Alan. I've been working on the bylaws for the other GNSO improvement issues, but I was under the assumption that the new PDP process would be adopted later. But you're exactly right. I'm sure the existing process addresses, for example, constituencies and doesn't talk about stakeholder groups and, you know, like some of the basic structure.
And that may be okay, but we need to look at it and see
right.
if there are any things that need to be changed. There may be very little.
Right. And on that first item where you talked about, I think it's interesting, you said basically a discussion of maybe there are elements that the group thinks should be hard-coded in the bylaws, while others are more of a recommendation for GNSO rules of operation or something like that,
yeah.
Which could be changed by a vote of the council. I think that I would put that, Margie, in task two as an overall issue. If the group that's tackling, well, if the group as a whole thinks, yeah, this needs to be hard-coded, or whether it thinks that this is something that's more of a rules of operation as it tackles each of these issues.
That's right. That's right. And so we'll have two topics, one related to kind of the transition and then also related to what will eventually be, you know, hard-coded versus, you know, something that's more flexible.
Okay. I think those are good suggestions. Anybody else have any comments? Okay. So what I propose is... we had agreed in Mexico City, at least initially, to meet every other week, which would mean not next week, but the week after that. I'm hoping this time is good for most people, but we will send out a note on this to make sure that the people who couldn't attend today, it was just because of one-offs and not that it's a standing conflict. So we'll try to find that out. Between now and then, I really want to kind of nail down at least a good straw man of the issues to be addressed and put all the other tasks that we talked about, make sure we incorporate everything from this call in those documents and come to a decision on the next call as to how logistically we're going to do all of this. And, you know, think about things like breaking down into teams. But as Alan said, it's not teams that would go off and do a document that's final and, you know, that's how it gets submitted. It's more breaking up teams just to get the straw man in place, to get something in writing so that the group as a whole could discuss it. Does anybody have any other suggestions? All right. Is there anything anybody else wants to bring up on this call? Great. I appreciate everyone showing up for this, and the next call, unless there's a huge amount of conflicts, and we'll find that out on the email, the next call will be scheduled for April 2nd. Is that right? April 2nd, at the same time. Okay? I don't know. Cheryl, what time is it for you out there? Are you still...
For me in the Antipodes, it's coming up to 20 minutes past 2 in the morning.
Wow. Okay.
No, open it. It's okay.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll make sure that the time works for everyone. And I apologize that it's so late or early for you, however you look at it.
Yeah, but she's only here because I couldn't be here for the first part, so it's not a mandatory one for her.
Okay. Great. I mean, not great that you're not.
She likes working at this time of day.
I'm sure everyone does. Okay, thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jeff.
Benedetta?